To deal with such a big text in 5 days is very difficult, right? Obviously, and one has to make a selection. Yeah, I have given an overview, right, in the last few days, you know, like a little bit. Did it very fast though, yeah? And another thing I did on the first day, where I asked some of the generic questions like who, what, when, where, and why, right? And then I got into answering these questions: who, what, when, where, and why. And who the Chaitanya Charitamrita is dealing with, first of all, Lord Chaitanya. So then, speaking about Lord Chaitanya, I purposely wrote Lord Chaitanya, you know, like, of course, we generally speak about Lord Chaitanya, but I'd like to emphasize that Lord, because that is obviously a big thrust of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, to establish Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it's doing that. Right, so that's one of the purposes. And the divinity of Lord Chaitanya is described in the middle of the Adi Lila. The first part of the Adi Lila is a philosophical introduction of the Panchatattva. Then we get some verses that are called that's the first seven chapters. Then the Bhakti Kalpataru, in four chapters, the way that the movement is spreading and all the branches coming of Lord Chaitanya through different Vaishnavas. And then chapter 13 begins with the advent of Lord Krishna, of Lord Chaitanya, up to chapter 17. Right? And then you basically look from 13 to chapter 17, Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Then Lord Chaitanya, his childhood pastimes, then a youth, and finally leading up to taking sannyas. In the Madhya Lila, Lord Chaitanya has taken sannyas. Now in chapter 13, the advent of Lord Chaitanya, we find emphasis placed on the fact, on his divinity. Already earlier in the second chapter of Adi Lila, philosophically, Krishna Das has done some work to establish Krishna as the ultimate Supreme Lord, and then establishing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that same Krishna. But now he gets more into it. Since I said chapter 2 was already a reference to Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in chapter 2, verse 22, there is a purport, and in the purport, Adi 2:22, there is a list of verses that establish the divinity of Lord Chaitanya. We will not read those verses now, that will take too much time. But just if you're interested, you make a note, you remember it, it's easy to remember, Adi 2:22, and you see a list of verses about Lord Chaitanya being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, verses from some Upanishads, Bhagavatam, and some other Puranic literature establishing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Some of them are a little vague, you know, you could try to explain these verses different, and some of them are very specific, saying the son of Sachi, also mentioning that in the age of Kali, the Supreme Lord will appear and will take sannyas and things like that. So some are very clearly referring to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when you look at that kind of evidence, you have to, for us, for internally, we accept it all as evidence, but then you look at it again, which ones are useful in presentations to people who don't accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you can't just take it, you know, and throw it at like a professor, yeah, like our Krishna Kshetra's colleagues, right?
would not all accept these arguments. They would cut it up in many pieces, and I'm sure you, Professor Ksetra, could do the same if he wanted to.
It's a fact that so devotees sometimes are a little insensitive in that way too, and just copy and paste, here's the evidence. So you look at that 222. Then the associates of Lord Chaitanya, I introduced Swarup Damodar Goswami as the secretary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a mysterious personality. He was always there. When Lord Chaitanya was in Navadvip, then Swarup Damodar was also in Navadvip. When Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, Swarup Damodar also took sannyas. He went to Benares, took sannyas, and then for a while he was not with Lord Chaitanya, and then he joined him again in Jagannath Puri. And when he joined him in Jagannath Puri, he became his personal secretary, and he was basically with him all the time, and he was extremely learned, and also he was a very good singer, and that's why his name was Damodar. That's a title given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His actual name was Swarup. He came with that name Swarup, and then Damodar was given because he was a singer. And then, so oftentimes he is singing for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he's singing, well, he stayed with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout till the end. And in the final pastimes, Lord Chaitanya stayed in Jagannath Puri and went into more internal consciousness, meaning he was no longer into preaching or into interacting with the world to teach Krishna consciousness. He was just absorbed in his own relationship with Krishna. And at that time, having so many ecstatic experiences, and then Swarup Damodar would sing according to the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Swarup Damodar would sometimes sing one line of a song that was like particularly like suitable to the occasion, and then he would just repeat that, like sometimes for many, many hours, the same line, over and over. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would just stay on that same point, over and over. So he's really assisting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his absorption and going, following it. Swarup Damodar was also like the philosophical authority. Being the secretary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were lots of people who were interested in, well, there are many brahmanas at that time who were pandits, who were learned in scripture, who wrote commentaries or essays on the scripture. And if you could get Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to read your essay, right, then, you know, that would add to your fame. You become very famous. I can give one example that I did not give yet before, but that I'll give you now. That in Orissa, there was a particular person who wrote a commentary on the Bhagavatam in the Oriya language, and his name was Jagannath Das. And it is known as the Oriya Bhagavat. So it's the Bhagavatam in Oriya language. But there is a 13th canto. And in that 13th canto, the conclusion is Sunyavad. Philosophy due to a lot of Buddhist influence in Orissa. Anyway, this Jagannath Das, and this is the part I didn't tell yet, Jagannath Das took his Bhagavat, went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and said to and wanted to read it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Swarup Damodar, for some reason, wasn't there. And he said that he wanted to read it to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, no, 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 I cannot hear it. You are too great. He said, you are too great. And he said that in Oriya, and apparently in Oriya it is Atibari. You are Atibari, he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then Jagannath Das, from that day on, he told everyone about the story. And he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, said that I am Atibari. And from that day on, his name became Jagannath Das Atibari. And he took it as a title to his name. He just became Jagannath Das Atibari. And in fact, the Atibaris became a whole group. And at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there were 15,000 Atibaris. And the Atibaris are an apasampadaya that have their own concocted philosophies and ideas. And you know, there's that story of that Bhishikish saint. You may remember that yogi, and Bhaktivinoda was exposing this yogi who had Ras Leela pastimes with various personalities. And they put him in jail, but he had mystic power, and many people became ill. Bhaktivinoda also, and then in the end, they in the court, Bhaktivinoda was the judge, and he was like holding the court, and he was extremely attacked by fever. And then his partner, an Englishman, had read a book that many of these yogis have that power in the hair. So then, by force, they cut the hair of Bhishikish Sen. And then he lost all his power right there and then. Yeah. Anyway, he was an Atibari. That's the point. So the Atibaris are still there today. The Atibaris are like imitating Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they are claiming divinity themselves, and they make all their associates also associates of Krishna. So it's like that's an imitation. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates are actually having that double identity, part in Krishna's identity and part in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's identity. And the book that gives that is the Gaura Ganadev's Deepika, the Who is Who Guide. All right, so that is a summary a little bit. I did some more on associates, spoke a bit about Raghunath Das Goswami, spoke about the link between Swarup Damodar, Raghunath Das, and Krishna Das Kaviraj. Because Swarup Damodar, being the secretary of Mahaprabhu, being with him in the final days, he knew everything about the final activities and the ecstasies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he wrote it in a diary, but the diary was lost. Then, Raghunath Das was placed under his care by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Raghunath Das memorized that diary, which is now lost. So Raghunath Das passed on that information Krishna's Kaviraj, because Krishna Das had a siksha relationship with Raghunath Das, and in this way, Krishna Das was the qualified person to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because he knew about the later pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Another reason why Krishna Das was qualified was because he was he was trained by the Goswamis. I gave a reference of the Bhakti Ratnakar, which is a book written about the associates of Mahaprabhu and those after, like Maharatam and so on. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that the Bhakti Ratnakar is not completely reliable, by the way, not as reliable as the Chaitanya Bhagavat or Chaitanya Charitamrita. But the Bhakti Ratnakar does say that there was the Janavamata came to Mathura, Vrindavan, after the departure of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. At that time, she visited Rupa Goswami, and she heard from Rupa Goswami explanations of his books. She asked him about his books, and Rupa very enthusiastically personally told her, yes, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and it's about this, and he explained the whole book what it was about. Then it is said that she went to Radhakund, and in Radhakund she met Raghunath Das, and she also met Krishna Das Kaviraj there. So that puts, according to Bhakti Ratnakar, puts Krishna Das Kaviraj in Vrindavan at the time when Rupa Goswami was still present. So that's significant, because it establishes the connection between Krishna Das Kaviraj and Rupa Goswami. We are sure and certain. Jiva Goswami, by the way, was also a Radhakund at that time. So the connection between Jiva Goswami and Krishna Das Kaviraj, there's no doubt about that. The one with Rupa Goswami, that's a little bit in doubt. It's not completely clear. So it's not that Krishna Das Kaviraj was 90 years old, walked all the way from Bengal to Vrindavan,
and just start writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita and finish the book in 2 years. I mean, it's major work. It took a long time to compose it, and scholars think that it might have taken about 20 years, because there is some reference that he started the work in around 1880-something, whereas it's supposed to have been completed in the year 1615 or 1616, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, that sort of... I didn't say much about meetings with other sampradayas. I can talk a little more about that. That's something that I find across times. But that was cool. Why the Chaitanya Charitamrita was written was specifically to establish the final pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The devotees were very eager for that. It said, in the CC it's described, every day the devotees in Vrindavan would meet in the Radha Govinda temple, and they would listen to the Chaitanya Mangal, which was then the name of the Chaitanya Bhagavat. The name was changed later, when the second book, Chaitanya Mangal, came out. So they listened to that every day, but they missed the final pastimes, because Chaitanya Bhagavat doesn't describe the final pastimes. So they wanted Krishna Das Kaviraj, because he had heard it from Raghunath, and Raghunath heard from Sri Damodara, so therefore they wanted him to write it. So that's one reason why the Chaitanya Charitamrita, to have the final pastime. The other reason, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is more than the final pastimes. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is the final word. Now, I've borrowed that phrase from Tony Stewart, who wrote a book on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, academic, critical edition. And Tony Stewart, his book is called The Final Word. And he makes the point that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote, that Krishna Das Kaviraj wrote this book, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, with the idea to bring together the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, and to take the works of the Goswamis, right, and to sort of incorporate all the elements, different elements, which were important to different sectors of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And that meant some Gaudiya Vaishnavas were maybe putting the emphasis on one point, others on another point, yeah? And he incorporated it all. And he brought it all together. And in this way, with the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he sort of had a connection with every division of the Gaudiyas. Because the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, those who claimed to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time, they were very divided. And they were all like falling. By the time, 100 years after the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Krishna started to write his Chaitanya Charitamrita, at that time, the whole community of Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, philosophically, things were very, very confused, splintered. There was not like one clear movement. You know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had never preached very much in Navadvip, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu only became publicly a Vaishnava in the last 1.5 years of his stays in Navadvip. So therefore, he did some preaching in that time, but it was relatively short. And after he had been to Gaya and got initiated by Swarapuri. And then, the movement, it is said that at that time, the movement didn't fully blossom. Yeah? But, and that it, although certain people came and the foundation of the movement was laid, But then he took sannyas, and Mother Sati asked him to go to Jagannath Puri. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri, he sent Nityananda. He sent Nityananda to Bengal. And Nityananda basically is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's not much about Nityananda. But Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is the writer of Chaitanya Bhagavat, was a disciple of Nityananda. So Vrindavan Das Thakur really got into it. So the book about Nityananda is the Chaitanya Bhagavat. That's it. Not the Nityananda Charita that the devotees also really know. Leave that one on the shelf. Not like stand. It's sort of an apparent compilation with pastimes from here and there pulled together. It's not the authorized biography. The biography is Chaitanya Bhagavat. Read that one. Then you read about Nityananda.
Who was the author again, Maharaj?
Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is recognized as the Veda Vyasa of Chaitanya Lila.
Where was I now? No, it's okay, just let me reconnect with my brain. Just save your questions. No, it's all right. But save your questions for when I ask. I round it off and then I say, "Have any questions?" Because otherwise, this is what happens. I lose my train of thought. Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, I was now just describing, and. I'm on the final pastimes of.
On that book, the final pastimes. Okay, so the final pastimes, that book of Tony Stewart, is basically saying that that Krishna's very expertly. Dealt with every aspect that was related to Gaudiya Vaishnava. So there's he dealt with the various groups of Vaishnavas. He eloquently dealt with the development in Navadvip and the Bengalis so that they could identify with it. Eh? The Bengali Vaishnavas, the Advaita Acharya, as being one of the leaders of them, and Nityananda, of course, they got a lot of prominence, right? See, in Bengal, what happened was is that both Nityananda was Advaita Acharya. He was in Bengal before the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was 52 years older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Other people of that early era, they are described by Murari Gupta. Murari Gupta himself was a senior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's about 15 years older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Murari wrote the first diary, Chaitanya Charita, Mahakavya, or short Kadacha, which means diary. So Murari, he describes in his diary that in chapter 1, he begins to describe the elders, and he describes that there were devotees like Advaita Acharya was settled in Shantipur, he had a house in Shantipur, and he was preaching in his house in Shantipur. Other devotees who were there at the time were devotees like Pundarik Vijayanidhi, who had come from East Bengal. Yesterday we were I drew a little map here of
and Bangladesh. Now, the map's not completely to scale, because if I go by scale, I wind up somewhere here. Yeah? So I'll just do it here. It should be a little more there. And this is Sylhet. Right? Then here, in the north, is a border, is India. This is Meghalaya, India. Okay, so Sylhet, and here somewhere in the middle, is Dhaka, the current capital of Bangladesh. So Sylhet, and then, well, I may as well go on a little, and then we have in the south somewhere, we have Chittagong. Okay, just near Chittagong is Pundarik Dam, the appearance place of Pundarik Vijayanidhi, Vasudev Datta, Mukunda Datta, and somehow or other we can see that everyone came to Navadvip, right? from all over. Here is Rajshahi, and then here is Prem Tully. So this is the area of Narottamdas Thakur, and Prem Tully is where Narottam found Krishna Prem in the river. It's said that one day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being here in Ramakeli, was looking at the Ganga and is calling out the name Narottam, 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 and that he looked in the direction here where Narottam in the future would appear, and Narottam then. Lord Chaitanya had deposited Krishna Prem in the river, and Narottam got that Krishna Prem. And when he entered into that river, he had a blackish complexion, and when he went into the water, he turned golden. When he came out, he was golden. His own mother could play tennis. Believe it or not. So, just here, somewhere here, is a river, and there is the birthplace of Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya came from here and settled in Shantipur, which is like, let's say somewhere here. Yeah, he settled in Shantipur. Shantipur. So yeah, there was the abode of Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya was not just that he had a house in Shantipur. Advaita Acharya was the leader of the Vaishnavas, you know, like before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And Advaita Acharya was like the teacher. So the house of Advaita Acharya was a big thing, and devotees would go from Navadvip to Shantipur and join the Bhagavad Gita classes from Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya was trying to write a commentary on the Gita, and it was called Gitira Satyapat. And Gitira Satyapat means the Satyara means the true, and Pat means in this case explanation, right? The true explanation. Yeah? Or if you want to translate that into easier English, the Bhagavad Gita
as it is.
So, you know, it looks that Srila Prabhupada took his famous phrase, Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the Vedic Acharya's Gita Satya Path.
Jot that down somewhere.
So,
it is said that Advaita Acharya was sometimes getting stuck in his explanations. And it's in chapter 13 of the Gita, there is a verse that the Lord has no hands and no legs, and still he's walking. So it's like, still he's present everywhere, that's what it says.
He has no hands, no legs, and still he's present everywhere. So, you know, Advaita Acharya was trying to establish personalism in the midst of like an ocean of impersonalist Brahmanas. And Advaita Acharya, he was basically causing a riot, you know, like in his area. And people would have certainly taken action to him about it. And you know, some were even in the mood that he should be excommunicated, because that was the big thing in India, that if you know, as a Brahmana, if you were like deviant, they could excommunicate you. And that was it, you know. But Advaita Acharya was from a very aristocratic Brahmana family, wealthy also. His grandfather was a minister in the Sylhet area. And I'll go back to the man. He was a minister in the Sylhet area, and had a house in Shantipur. If you now go to Shantipur, there are two places in Shantipur. One place is the place of Advaita Acharya's grandfather, and he stayed there first. And the other place is the house of Advaita Acharya, where he stayed later. So if you go to Shantipur to see the house of Advaita Acharya, ask for the other place also. You know? So, and then you go to both places. Or in Mayapur, you can ask and get them to tell you if you can see both places. Anyway, Advaita Acharya was the leader of the Vaishnava Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes in his explanations of the Bhagavad Gita, he was getting stuck. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would appear before him in a dream and give him the answers. So this would happen. Later, there is the time when Chaitanya Bhagavat, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed his divine identity for the first time to the devotees in the house of Srivas. And he kicked the door of Srivas's house. Srivas at that time was sort of just in an awkward situation, because people had complained to the Muslim government that he was having these kirtans in his house. So the Muslim government had had said that they would send a boat with soldiers to take care of the man. That meant, you know, like, basically their style was kill Srivas, take all his possessions, right? And in that way, you know, set an example for the Hindu community to make it really clear that that we didn't want this kind of activity. So Srivas then was at home and he was worshipping Lord Srinidev. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat. So it says, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had begun, had already revealed himself. He was already recognized by Advaita Acharya as the Supreme Lord in Shantipur. And then he walked to the house of Srivas and he kicks the door full force. So at that time, Srivas is shaking, thought the soldiers had come, and then this thundering voice, you know, Srivas, right? Srivas, open the door. And don't you know that the one you are worshipping is standing at your door? So he's just like, you know, okay, opens the door, and there's Nimai. And he sort of sees first this goes, Nimai? And then he realizes that Nimai is the Supreme Lord. He sees it. He can see his. Suddenly it dawns, how could I not have seen it before? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just walks into the house, sits on the altar, moves the shaligram shilas aside, and just sits down in the middle on the altar and says, are you going to worship me? And then, you know, spontaneously, all kinds of people start to bring things for an abhishek. And it's an enormous abhishek, and nothing is organized, but it all comes together. Everyone just spontaneously brings things, and they get this big abhishek. So that's the Mahaprakash Leela. The next thing that happened in the Mahaprakash Leela is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would say something to every devotee to confirm his divinity. Like there was one devotee, he was a grihastha, and one night he was traveling with his beautiful wife and even more beautiful young daughter. And it was night, and they were, and some men started to follow them, some Muslim men. So he's getting very worried, you know, very worried, and he was very moving very fast with the ladies to stay ahead of these guys that were sort of somewhere in the back. And then they came to a river, and he just prayed, oh, he prayed and prayed, you know, oh Lord, please save us from this situation. And then out of nowhere a boat appeared, and he got into the boat and they got away. And then Lord Chaitanya said, remember that night? Oh boy, I remember that night. Lord Chaitanya said, remember how on that night a boat just appeared out of nowhere? Oh yes, yes, of course. That was amazing. Lord Chaitanya said, that boatman was I. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya saved him. So this is all the Mahaprakash Leela. And he tells stories like that with everyone. With Advaita Acharya, the story is this, that he speaks about this Gitara Satyapat, this explanation, the true explanation that Advaita Acharya is trying to give on the Gita, the personal commentary of the Gita, and then about the 13th verse. So the 13th chapter in that verse that speaks how the Lord is Apanipadam, has no hands and no feet, and yet is everywhere. And Advaita Acharya couldn't explain that verse in a personal way. You know, he'd been thinking about it, how to explain that verse in a personal manner. And you can look up the verse yourself, you know, Apanipadam verse. And chapter 13. And then Lord Chaitanya gave the answer. Lord Chaitanya said, it's Paramatma.
And that was it. It's Paramatma. Right? He's everywhere. Right? He's everywhere. He's just all-pervading. So the verse is describing Paramatma. Right? Okay, then there was a personal explanation to the verse, which is plausible, simple, and straightforward. So then, in that way, he was convincing Advaita Acharya that he knew what was on his mind and that he had the answers to him, okay, as a sign of his divinity. Chaitanya Bhagavat. Anyway, with this whole story, I'm just sketching that Advaita Acharya was a leader, that there were other disciples of Madhavendra Puri. Advaita Acharya was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Pundarik Vijayanidhi was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Iswara Puri came there. So really, Sambhidananda is writing, the disciples of Madhavendra Puri were preaching. They were preaching before in Bengal before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then we see Advaita Acharya got a big following, and but that following in Bengal became a problem because they started to claim that only those who were direct descendants of Advaita Acharya, that they were qualified to be gurus. And that was then Advaita Vamsa. And their disciples would be Advaita Parivar. A similar thing happened with Nityananda, and you have Nityananda Vamsa and Nityananda Parivar. The Nityananda Vamsa means the direct family lineage, and the Parivar means their disciples. And then only people from, they say, only people from the Nityananda Vamsa, they can really be gurus because only they have the divine Shakti within them. Yeah. You see, like a similar thing in Islam about the imam. You know, the imam has to be from the family of the prophet, right? And it's like the real imam is a descendant of the family of the prophet, and then he carries the divine power. So the same line of reasoning there, maybe even influenced, you know, maybe possibly because of the Islam presence, it could even be that inspired the idea, or that they got the idea on their own, I can't say. So you see, in Bengal, you had two hubs, really. Two hubs of followers, large groups of followers, around Nityananda and around Advaita Acharya. Okay, there's more about Advaita Acharya, that three of his sons didn't accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They, as the Supreme Lord, they only accepted Advaita Acharya as the Supreme Lord. So that's is a schism, a split. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita deals with that and condemns those three sons as useless, right? And they have rewritten the history, and whereas in the biographies that are accepted as bona fide by our sampradaya, like Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat and even Chaitanya Mangal. It is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who's in the superior position instructing Advaita Acharya, revealing knowledge to Advaita Acharya. There is a lot of literature from this split-off group of the three sons. There's like books like Advaita Prakash, books like Advaita Mangal, which are not accepted as bona fide by us. And there is the Sita Charita, and these are all books that are not bona fide and that overemphasize the role of Advaita Acharya and minimize the role of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. all with the idea to give more importance and more prominence to the line of Advaita in which these people were. And there are modern exponents, and here we also have like a devotee here in the Benelux who is initiated in that line, and he's a nice enough person, I know him well, but yeah, he is adhering to that philosophy, right? And so we are in disagreement what to do. So Krishnadas. Krishnadas Kaviraj begins to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita after that's all over. Right? After that's all going on, you know, the Advaita Acharya's situation has come about, the split in his family has come about, the different groups of Vaishnavas come about. Then around Nityananda, Nityananda is sent to Bengal, and you can read in the Chaitanya Bhagavat how Nityananda left Puri to preach. And they were so ecstatic, and had such an ecstatic kirtan. And sometimes in the kirtan, one devotee would just go in the mood of, like, stand like Krishna. And then all the others would just have kirtan around him, and it would go on for 9 hours. He would stand like that for 9 hours. And then, you know, the kirtan party would go on again, and then, like, on the way to Vrindavan on the way to Bengal from Puri, and then at one point someone said, where are we going? Are we on the right way? And then they asked someone, which is the way to Bengal? And said, that's back, 5 kilometers back, or whatever they were measuring in at that time. Yes, Krosas, you know, so many Krosas back, right? So then they had to go back, and then they again missed the turn, you know. So it took a long time to make it to Bengal, but eventually they reached. So Nityananda's preaching, it is said he attracted a group of young boys, and they got into the kirtan, and they had a 30-day kirtan. 24 hours a day, just 30 days, non-stop kirtan, never ended. And these boys became more and more ecstatic, and at one point they ripped trees out of the ground at the end of the kirtan. Believe it or not, they didn't eat during those 30 days, they just had kirtan, but they became so ecstatic in the kirtan that they ripped trees out of the ground. And it's described that old men started to jump like mad, and they jumped, and some of them jumped so high that they jumped in the trees, and they start dancing on the branches of the trees, even on the thin twigs, and the twigs didn't break. So this is all Chaitanya Bhagavat, right? So then again, idea of how Nityananda was preaching in Bengal. Then Nityananda, you may know this story that Nityananda was decorated with many jewels and gold and rings and everything, and was followed by some dacoits who were trying to steal this, and it was a big thing, and it didn't work out, and in the end the dacoits just gave up and surrendered to Nityananda. Now, it is described that why did Nityananda have so many jewels and so much gold? Because he had a disciple named Udaharan Datta Thakur. This Udaran Datta Thakur is an interesting personality. He was from the Suvarna Varnik community, a community of Kayastas who were into goldsmith, and like they were into they were very wealthy families, and they were having large quantities of gold and jewels and so on. So Udaran Datta Thakur was from that background, and he provided Lord Nityananda with all the gold and all the jewels and so on. Now in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada in the purport, when he discusses Udaran Datta Thakur, mentions something very interesting. And he says that somehow or other, we also appeared in our family in that line from Udarandatta Thakur. And he said that every year in the village of Udarandatta, which is known as Udaranpur, in that village there is a mela. And Prabhupada says that once a year there's a celebration, some mela, and he gives the day also. And he said, and then all the people of that caste or that community, they would assemble there. And Prabhupada said he would also, with his family, go there as a child to this place, Udaranpur, every year for the celebration. So personally, I would like to recommend that ISKCON devotees start attending this celebration with a delegation, you know, every year with a Harinam party, that we join this celebration. Just to commemorate that Prabhupada would partake in that. And then he came from that background. And after all, Udarandatta Thakur is our Acharya and very close to Lord Nityananda. Yes. I can't hear you.
Which part of India is that?
Bengal. A little bit north of Navadvip. So this is the Goda Mandal. The Goda Mandal around. So you have Navadvip Mandal, and you do the Navadvip Mandal Parikrama, and then you have the greater Goda Mandal around Navadvip Mandal. It's mentioned how many, the radius of it, something roughly a 90 kilometers, a circle of about 90 kilometers around Navadvip is still within the Goda Mandal. So it's within the Goda Mandal. And then you have the greater Gaudiya area, right? Like the, which is the whole Bengali area, which I sort of... So there's a thing here of 90 kilometers around here. Yeah? Looks to me that just here... where's my pen? Here. Santipur, then there's Chakra, so it must be here. Here is Haridas, his place, Bainapol, right? You remember the story of the prostitute? Bainapol is here. So that might just be, I haven't measured that, but it might just be in the circle of 90 k's of the Goda Mandal. Haridas is the place. Rupa Sanatana will be maybe just outside, like that. But a bit to the north, somewhere here, is Udaranpur. So he was a significant person, right? And the other significant disciple of Nityananda is Abhiram Thakur. The stories about Abhiram are also recorded. And he had that whip, the Jaimangal, and Srinivas went there, and he touched him once, and Srinivas became ecstatic. And he touched him again, and Srinivas became more ecstatic, and he wanted to touch him a third time. And his wife said, "Stop, he still has to preach." There's also the story about him offering obeisances to any Shaligram Shila that was not a real Shaligram Shila would crack if he would offer his obeisances to it. And when Nityananda's wife was expecting children, then after the birth of the children, Abhiram Thakur immediately came, and after the first child was born, he came. He offered his obeisances to the child, and the child died. It died. So it was a big thing, you know. Then the next child, he came again. Again he offers obeisances, and the child dies. So, you know, this was like getting a bit much. And by the time, I forgot how many children it was. There's a number of children. But then, when it was again... A child was born, and this was Virabhadra. By then, you know, Nityananda had given order He had given order to every boatman in Bengal, do not take Abhiram across the river. This is my order. So Abhiram found this boat, right? He came to this boat and he said to the boatman, I want to go across the river. And the boatman said, well, you know, that's going to be difficult because my boat is not going across the river. He made a hole in the boat. And the boat, so he let the boat sink. He said, Nityananda gave the order that cannot, you are Abhiram Thakur, and you cannot come across the river. But Abhiram, somehow or other, nobody knew how, came across the river. And then they were there with the newborn child, and they saw him coming. Abhiram, oh no, no, not Abhiram Thakur. Abhiram came in the assembly, offered his obeisances, and nothing happened. Because here was Virabhadra, who was an expansion of the personality, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Abhiram then said, like, but how come the other children died and this one not? He said, like, I was testing them to see if they were an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. And anyone that was not an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, that one died. But the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, that one stayed. So Abhiram was another. These personalities of Nityananda's main followers, they were... They were very ecstatic. Yeah? They were... And the whole movement, you get the idea of Nityananda was very ecstatic. It wasn't so philosophical. It was not exactly a movement that spent a lot of time discussing the ins and outs of the Shastra. The focus is more on Kirtan. So it spread like anything, but also in Bengal, we got so many deviant Vaishnava sects, right? All the upper sampradayas, all different interpretations, there's a lot of wild growth, you know, like... So with this, and of course they have the different upper sampradayas, the 13 upper sampradayas that have been listed, and I can't really discuss it so much, but... By the time it was 1586, 100 years after Caitanya Mahaprabhu, when Krishna Das Kaviraj started to write the Caitanya Charitamrita, all that had become prevalent. So at that time, you had all these things. You had... the upper sampradayas, they had their influence in Bengal, in Puri, and in Orissa. In Orissa today, still 22% of the population as of today is tribal. So there's a very high percentage of tribal people. Right? And tribal... Tribal, no, stum. Yeah, tribe, a tribe. And stum. So, that was even more prevalent at that time, because now they have started a program, you know, to bring people to school, and you know, they're trying to get rid of this tribal identity, obviously, and of all the uneducated identities. So gradually, all the tribal identity is disappearing now, right? But still, 22% of the population is still living in a tribal identity now. So it was a much higher percentage 500 years ago. So Orissa, Prabhupada also used to say, like, Orissa is another level of culture, because it's like not Oriya Vaishnavism is less reliable because there's a big tribal background and so on. And of course, we learned about the Sabaras, as we say in ISKCON, generally called the Sabars. Right? Actually, it's more pronounced the Sabars. The Sabars that were keeping hogs. Right? Well, why are people keeping herds of pigs or hogs? Not for the milk. That's quite obvious. Right? So it's low class culture. Anyway, I'm just trying to present a little bit of a cultural setting. Yeah? The other day, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu was commenting, and rightly so, about the development of in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, the Goswamis were developing, and the whole Goswami school, the school of the six Goswamis, was developing. But it is a fact that next to the Goswamis, the Vallabha school also was developing and acquired a large development presence and interpretations and insights and so on. So Krishnadas Kaviraj's book is dealing with all of that. He's dealing with the whole cultural setting that he's in. And therefore, it's sometimes called, that's why Tony Stewart called it the final word, right? And I think he did well with that, you know, and did very well with the title and with that concept. The thing that's not so good about Tony Stewart's book is that he is seeing the whole thing as a political scheme. And he's thinking that the Vrindavan school of Vaishnavas were trying to establish their superiority over all the other groups of Vaishnavas by a manipulation and this incredible intelligent and intellectual personality called Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was engaged by them to design this amazing book which incorporated elements of all the different ideas that were floating around and bring it all under one head, and with under the guise of a biography of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it lended the ultimate authority to his book. Right? Writing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone claimed to be a follower of him, and then linked all these other things very nicely. So, if you strip Stewart's book of his basic misconception, you know, that the whole thing was politically motivated, and that the Vrindavan school was trying to take control. If you strip it of that misconception and just see that the Vrindavan Goswamis were trying to establish the Siddhanta, the proper conclusion of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as they had received it of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all in good faith and so on as disciples. And in that way we're preaching, and in that way, but he is right when he's saying that Krishnadas has incorporated all these things, and the book analyzes that quite well, these influences. In that way, if one with filters on reads that book, one gets something out of it. But I wouldn't say that's not like an introductory book to the CC for ordinary devotee. I would say, don't read it, forget it, don't waste your time. Just read the Nectar, read our book. But because we're here not in an ordinary temple classroom, and although at this point, the guests outnumber the students. Okay, we have three. That's a quorum. Yay. The idea is that generally we don't bother with these books as scholars, but here in the college, we're studying academic works and perspectives, so that's why today I'm analyzing it for you. Tony Stewart's, I've critiqued it just now, as for its merits and its, what's the opposite of merits? What's the word? Merits and da-da-da-da. You can look at the thesaurus. Antonym. Antonym of the word merits. You don't know English. No, with all due respect, it's like... Huh? Flaws, maybe. Flaws. This one word is flaws. Yeah. It's flaws. It's merits. Dismerits. It must be another word. Anyway, it's flaws or it's shortcomings, but it's not exact because we're talking about its credits and its discredits. So, for example, Tony Stewart gets into details and he writes like about Haridas Thakur. And when he writes about Haridas Thakur, he describes that Haridas Thakur never really became like a full-fledged, externally, a full-fledged Vaishnava, in the sense that he was completely shaved with Sika and Tilak and Kunti Mala, right? But that Haridas sort of still had the beard, right? Whatever that is. And that, so he calls him Yavana Haridas, you know, which was one of his names. And, well, you know, it is a fact that if you look at the paintings at Haridas's samadhi in Jagannath Puri, he does have a beard. He does have a beard like that on his paintings, right? but whether he had a beard or didn't have a beard, you know, a Muslim beard or not, he may have had. You know, he may have had. It's like totally unimportant. So then Tony Stewart. Yeah, he gives him like a dual identity, you know, like a Muslim identity and a Vaishnava identity, right? And then because he's a saintly person, he makes him, practically speaking, a peer. You know, a peer is a Muslim saintly person, right? Generally speaking. They were from the Sufi community. The Sufis were the mystics. So I can tell you a little bit about Sufis in a sec, you know, before we take a little break. The Sufis, they... Islam is distinct from Christianity and Hinduism. Or the Vedic tradition in one particular way is that it has no real emphasis on renunciation. Marriage is the institution which is like put in the foreground, and therefore the prophet is married, and there's like spiritual leaders are generally married, and not like celibacy is not like very much advocated. Yeah. You see some ascetics though. Ascetics were there, some fakirs were there who were like ascetics. But according to Encyclopedia Britannica, which still stands as well researched, I'd say it like that, you know, it's like amongst encyclopedias, it still has a standing. Yeah? According to Encyclopedia Britannica, it is said that when the early Christians began to settle in Palestine, right, they settled on Mount Carmel, right, and they had many hermitages there. And for quite some time, when Jerusalem was under the rule of the Crusaders, right? Later, you know, Islam recaptured Jerusalem. But when the Christians had Jerusalem, that at that time there were a lot of Christian mystics, monks residing there in hermitages, and it said that at that time, mysticism in Islam came up in association of this of these Carmelites, and then you get like early Sufi type of, or mystic literatures. Rumi is there, like mystic experiences, exchanges, poems with like exchange between the Supreme Lord and so on. So then, the Sufis, the mystics, they were very interested in India, very much so, right? So there's like lots of Sufis that kind of moved towards India. And there's like also narrations how Akbar was very broad-minded, and he received many Sufis in his court, he received many Jesuits in his court. At one point they thought he was going to be a Christian. That's how open he was. He was very, very open to Vaishnavas, and apparently was in Vrindavan with Jiva Goswami. So the Sufis, when they came to India, became very much influenced by Indian philosophy. And we see many Sufi writings coming from Sufis that settled into India, like, you know, like settlements going way towards the south and all over India. We see the Sufi literature appearing. And it's interesting that, especially after their stay in India, the Sufi literature began to reflect impersonalism. And in the early Sufi literature, the emphasis is more on the mystic search and unity, you know, like with God. But the strong impersonalist idea come out of the Sufi literatures after India. So it sort of hints that the impersonalist element of Sufism that we find these days is born or reinforced in India, has roots in Sankaracharya. That's interesting. So that's a little bit of Sufi. So anyway, so Stuart likes to put Haridas in the Sufi box. Well, you know, we don't know if that's where he belongs. All that we can say is that Haridas was from a very young age, chanting so many rounds, and stayed there in Benapole, and would stay in this area, move around, sometimes to visiting the house of Advaitacharya, sometimes would come to the Saptagram area where Raghunath Das was a small boy, and we care only about his devotional qualification. So if you read a book like that of Stuart, you get these kind of things, you know. And academics is always trying to explain everything, every personality, as being a product of his environment. And as I was very much studying the environment and see how he was influenced by all the things and how he had a bit of this and a bit of that. And that's what the tendency is in academics. So it's kind of natural to put Haridas in the Sufi box, but we really feel that like it's minimizing and not palatable, right? Not palatable at all, and certainly not proven, and therefore, with the academic mind is an explorer, and may get excited by such possibilities. I think the devotional mind would like to focus on the pure devotional identity. So... That's why I can't recommend reading the book of Stuart for devotees. I just use this as an example, you know, how it... for devotees who just try to develop their devotional creeper, if a devotee wants to, however, do an in-depth study of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then it's another thing. You know, like for myself, it's been like useful, but I've spent a lot of time researching. I'm a freelance researcher on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, teachings, history, and so on. And I had done a lot of work there, so I found it a useful book in that light, but one has to filter it. And filtering in one's reading means that one has to first, one filters these things through one's faith, you see. It's only through our faith in Prabhupada and in the bona fide teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we can filter. But if our faith is not strong enough, then our filter is not strong enough. Then if our faith is not refined enough, see, not only has to, faith has to, not just has to be strong, but faith has to be very refined. You can, you know, I can quickly just get creative for you. Do the mind map on faith, because I used to do here in this college before I started the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I used to do with the students a seminar on faith, a course on faith, Shraddha. And I did that many times. And one of the things we did there was also, make a little mind map of the roots of our faith. Let's say this is the ground. Now, if we have, let's say KC, yeah. We have here KC, Krishna consciousness. Well, you know, why have you accepted Krishna consciousness? Why? In one word, why? Well, not in 20 words, just one, like one word.
Krishna, I can understand the word, but it has
it's giving him
purpose.
He's finding purpose.
Okay, you've accepted it because you're finding purpose. What is the purpose you have found? You didn't go to the root. You went to a subroot. What is the root? Why have you found? Oh, but we can. Okay, we can do it the other way around. No problem. We'll follow your. Hold on. You found purpose. What purpose did you find? See, this is not refined. So your faith, your net, has very big holes like this. So you want to make the holes small.
So for what of my existence?
Purpose of your existence. He's still speaking generic terms. So as long as you speak generic terms, you can translate it for him. Okay, as long as you speak generic terms, the holes of your net are big. So he said, of his existence. Okay. What else?
It works. We see that the process works in our experience.
Krishna conscious. Okay, that's a different root. It works.
It makes the sense, you know. It makes sense.
Okay, well, someone like
I'll go to that side of the room to some of the students now. Student 1, student 2, student 3. Guests are out now. Delete.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much.
I'm deleting the guests, what I'm saying. Blurred.
Okay,
I don't see any guests. Students, give me a reason in one word, you know, why KC?
Like it.
Love it. You guys are all the same.
Yeah. You're all...
Okay, I'm going to criticize all of you later. Student 2.
Is faith? Okay. Yeah.
Faith.
Yeah.
You came to Krishna consciousness, faith. I'm gonna take my head off now.
Is that a compliment?
Faith. My God.
No thanks for that stem out, man.
Faith. Okay. And student number 3. Ta-da-da-da.
Yeah, next, Prabhupada's books.
Yeah, finally something specific. Thank God. Everybody else joined because of faith, you know what I mean?
Why are you joining Hare Krishna? Because of faith. What do you have to give up, you know? No meat, fish, eggs, intoxication, no less sex, no gambling. Jeez, how old are you? Why are you doing all this, young man? Because of faith.
But I mean, I'm not on the case. I'm trying to publicly ridicule you, but you understand, because your term is so broad and generic that no one in the world is going to really feel like, wow, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're on TV, and the camera is zooming in on you, and I, the interviewer, just ask you, and so, you know, how old are you? You know, like, you never feel like, you know, and what are you guys following? 4 words. Why is it?
Because of faith.
It's not going to... So, Prabhupada's books, okay, that's something you can sink your teeth in, you know? I mean, at least it's something. It works. Okay, the pragmatic argument. And so, no problem at all. It works. What's it?
The process.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, come on, you know, I mean, I need to... If you got one like this... I'm going to have to glue paper onto this, right? And here, and extend it to the floor. I have to start writing on the floor until it comes to you, until you finally say something specific. I like Hare Krishna because I like cauliflower pecans, you know? I mean, something. Or I...
It's giving taste and it's based on scriptures.
You are all not understanding how faith works at all. That's not why you joined. You joined because of some specific points. If you narrow it down, it narrows down a lot further. You know, you joined because you read something. Like you read your Prabhupada's books and one day you read something and it struck you. Right? That's where you joined. I remember I was in Maglab Ganj, Dharamsala Himalayas, in India, watching the Buddhists. And I was interested in Buddhists, Buddhist lamas, very mystic, Tibetan. But this man did not, and they do circles around the prayer mills. So they're walking around, this old lama is walking around, and I was seated on the side. And the old lama, I greeted him because I wanted to talk to a lama, and he did not respond. He just walks past like nothing, you know? So I go, and so
I was thinking to myself, okay, well, maybe it's old, you know, little death, you know, maybe, you know, and maybe deeply absorbed also in this thing, you know. So I thought, maybe, but he was coming around in circles. So I thought the next time he comes around, I went like, hello, right? No reaction, nothing. You know, that's the thought. And then it was getting strange, you know. And I thought, he doesn't want to know me. Yeah? So I was kind of shocked, you know. Because I had kind of an idea that Buddhist lamas are very exalted, noble, spiritual personalities, and it's really interesting to talk to one, you know. And, yeah, climb all the way up the mountain, you know, and finally got one face to face, you know. And then he doesn't recognize me. Yeah? So there was a bit. No, not for blocking me.
Okay, yes.
I got saved. And so then, you know, I got turned off, right? And then someone just about 10 days before had given me the Bhagavad Gita as it is. And when I opened it up, just right then and there, it came on impersonalists. And I'm reading about impersonalists. And I read that the happiness of the impersonalist is like basically a state where one is liberated from suffering and then it doesn't go any further. Then one has reached that point. Whereas the happiness of the devotee is an eternally increasing happiness because there's always new aspects of Krishna, new love developing and so on. So when I read that, it dawned upon me, you know, A, that guy is an impersonalist, right? As Buddhists. Right? That's it, you know. And I think, then I'd read other books, and I think, you know, he thinks I'm a projection of his mind. Well, I don't. So, like, one thing I'm quite sure, I'm not a projection of his mind. You know? Right? So then I didn't buy it. One sec. And then, you know, so then I had that concept of that the happiness in Krishna consciousness is the eternally growing happiness, and therefore I suddenly dawned on me it's a greater concept of God. Then that must be the truth. And I accepted it then and there. And that's where I accepted Krishna consciousness. I can identify it started there. And it's more specific than purpose, more specific, it's specific, it's a point, you know, it's the tipping point. Boom, identified the tipping point for you. Then. That sort of turned me over, right? So, okay, now I accept this. Yeah? So that's what I'm asking for. So love it was a great answer, but when did you love what?
Yeah, now I'm going to argue. Because we are in the second generation, so we was raised in Krishna consciousness. And he was like, from the beginning, he didn't know all this philosophy, all this Buddhist, non-Buddhist, and he just liked it very much.
That's okay. What's your first memory? What's your first memory of liking it?
Kirtan?
Wait, again, generic. Tell me the Kirtan. Give me a picture. Stand somewhere, you know, you're 3 years old. Your vision is at the height of millions of people, right? This is as tall as you are. And you see these towering people, you know, doing kirtan and flowers everywhere. No, I'm just, you know, that's what I want to hear, something specific.
Yeah, kind of like Bhakti Tirtha Swami, and we are around him, and it was amazing.
There you go. Love it. Now see, I'm sorry for doing this so aggressive. But I have to, I'm squeezing on, see, love it, what? It starts with Bhakti Tirtha Swami. There he goes, Tirtha Swami. Amazing. It starts to get real now. Phew. Thanks. That's good, because this is what, in the we can see, what I'm trying to show is that you know, Krishna consciousness, love it. He didn't love everything about it. You know,
You can't watch certain TV programs as a kid. You didn't like that. Or, you know, a few other things that Hare Krishna kids don't do, and I'm sure you didn't like some of these things. So you can't just say you just loved it when you were born. But you loved enough of it to sort of say it got you, something got you, you know what I mean? Some things they must have gotten you.
Yeah, but the point was that maybe not necessarily it should be something philosophical. No, books were standard.
No, I just gave you my story. I mean, like that. I had gone through years of darkness, years of suffering, years of misconceptions, years of like misguided, depressed people. A father who was like into Nietzsche and into making money, and you know, and who told me on 3 days before he died that I chose the wrong direction in my life. Finally, boy, I mean, which was something incredible, because never ever in his life did he have made one mistake. So, but that's another, this is another thing. So for me, okay, I needed to do some research and figure it out. What is it? You know, what is the way? I have my Tibetan story. But I mean, I wasn't criticizing, no. I just wanted to get out of the generic terms. Yeah. Because, you know, and it's not that I'm attacking you all without reason. The reason is that if our faith is in generic terms, then it's sort of a fake thing, you know. And the more specific it becomes, the more meaningful it becomes. You see, it's like you can say, like, "Well, you know, I love Vrindavan. You know, I really love Vrindavan." Okay, great. Now tell me what you really love about Vrindavan, and do you like? Do you like it that there's plastic bags lying around everywhere on the ground? Do you like it that on the bank of the Yamuna people are passing stool and urine? Do you like it that the sewage of Vrindavan is flowing in the gutters? Do you like it that there is, you know, around Janmashtami that has lots of malaria in Vrindavan? Do you like it that, you know? So, obviously, don't like it. To say I love Vrindavan is generic, it's not specific enough. You don't love those things of Vrindavan, I assume. So our love for Vrindavan, which is really what binds us, is something else. Maybe I love Govardhan in the rainy season when the sun shines through the clouds and Govardhan takes an incredible blackish bluish color. For example. Then it gets more specific, or I love Parashan. You know what I mean? If it gets specific, then we speak about what touches our heart and what really gives us happiness, what really gives us inspiration. Those are the real links. When you say I love Vrindavan, then it's a generic term and it's all right, but it's not like specific. So the idea of the roots is bring it down to specifics and more. Like if I would say, I go up here now, and I go with her, you know, I like SP books, right? Yeah. And I like the deities, and I like kirtan, and these are all reasons, but I like prasada. Now, that's still general, right? Then when you go a little further, say, why do I like prasadam? Well, I like prasadam because, A, it tastes good, undoubtedly, right? Taste. But also, I like it because the spiritual benefit, you know, you're getting, right? You get also eternal benefit, so that's the second thing. Eternal. Okay, forget the benefit, it's too long. And then, you know, you see that, like, people that live their lives with prasadam their whole life, they change. It's something that changes people. So we see people prasadam. Okay, now I give some reasons. Prasadam, deity, same thing, you know, like. I like the deities. Yeah, they're beautiful, isn't it? You know, around the Gopinath.
Nice statues. Huh? Lovely statues, very beautiful, nice flowers, nice decorations, and so on.
Ho, ho, ho. Not statues. Right? Not statues at all. They are actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How do you know? What's your proof? How do you know? Certification. How? How do you reciprocate?
I'm so great.
Let me hear what's his thing.
I say prayers.
Huh?
Prayers as well.
They answer prayers. Any other idea? They reciprocate. Okay, stop there. How do you know they reciprocate? You feel it, that they reciprocate. Any other reciprocations? Any other proof?
Any proof in the scriptures.
Huh?
Any proof in the scriptures.
Yeah. Okay, well, scriptures is another. Scriptures. Reciprocate, feel it. Okay, anything else? I'm just focusing on you. I'm going to milk you now. I don't feel bad about it tonight. Please don't find my aggressive approach to milking the cows. Any other reason why you would accept the deities as God? Scriptures, and they reciprocate.
Can they serve it for them?
Okay, is that a proof that they are God? I'm saying it's like, why you're accepting the deed that the deities are not statues?
Depends on our conscience.
That's good. Yeah, you have like acharya, you have scriptures, you have acharyas and pramukhas. You have very advanced pujaris. Yeah. You see, people, they have worshipped deities for a long time, they became saint beings. Yeah? Like Janani was in Mayapur. Yeah, so in this way, in the end, you have some roots here. Yeah? You're not just saying, I'm into Krishna consciousness, I believe in Krishna consciousness because of the deities, but you have some roots. So you have to have many roots and even more worked out than I've done here. And the more your roots are worked out, the stronger your faith. Yeah. The more you like, okay, in detail like that, then the stronger your filters. So if your filters are not so developed, then it's not good to
read a lot of the other materials. Any feedback? Forgive me for my offenses.
Sorry.
Hmm?
Sorry.
Sorry for what? Sorry for what? For not being specific.
Yeah. But you told us only one word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I have to write it down, isn't it? I mean, I have a small paper, you know. But you can't write a book on that, can you?
If you ask me again, I will say bandus, you know, I remember.
What?
If you ask me again, I say bandus, it is an England word. Bandus, you know, bandus. Pandus.
Pandus.
Pandavas.
Pandavas. Pandavas.
Pandavas. I like the good characters when I read Mahabharata. After that, I want to know the devotees, you know.
Yeah, okay, see? So his face started with the Pandavas, you know. Yeah. Then it becomes more, because what did you say before? You said yours was purpose, you know? So now from purpose he went to something more real, right? How did you get to Krishna consciousness? Purpose, I mean purpose of existence. All right, what purpose did it give you? It's this very generic terms are not. But we have to have many roots, right, in Krishna consciousness. Yes. We must have roots in the scriptures, we must have roots with the deities, we must have roots with the Vaishnavas, we need to have many roots, then we are strong. And Prabhupada is like a main strong root. Anyway, that's just something. So, although this seminar is a little bit drawing from other sources, also academic sources, and the college is the suitable place for that. I don't think that necessarily every devotee has to read all kinds of academic books about Lord Chaitanya. And but one who is more mature, who's like been longer in Krishna consciousness, has made it more part of his life, may do more research and then bring it back to us. That is nice. So like because ultimately we're studying here what is essential to us, that this book, this Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is our spiritual nourishment, you know, it's what is supposed to destroy our anarthas, to strengthen our taste, to deepen our faith, to make us more attached to Krishna, to find shelter when we feel weak, when we feel that we cannot, that actually we cannot follow the high standards of the scriptures that we find in these teachings and instructions, that we find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is there, and that this mercy is gonna help us, save us. There are verses like, which are to me kind of not just verses that I memorize. Katanchana yasmi, because now I forget Katanchana yasmi yasmi. Say it very loud. So this verse basically establishes that we are um, in our practices, not alone, but that in the background, Lord Chaitanya is present. And that he is making things that are difficult, he makes them easy. And that without him, even difficult things are easy. So that's not like anything scholarly, you know, that's just katanchana smite yasmin duskaram sukaram bhavet. That is basically a principle that is central to our spiritual life. It's not so much an analytical verse or anything like that. It's simply, but it's crucial. Eh? It's crucial because it establishes. It's there for people like us, you know, who are really weak. Because no matter how brilliant any of us may be in terms of material qualifications, we're all experiencing the same thing. That behind our glory or lack of glory, that we are just very small when it comes to spiritual qualification. We're very small Vaishnavas, and we're sort of like finding ourselves here in a surrounded by standards which are just, you know, way over our head. Sometimes it has been said that our movement is the movement where there's the biggest dichotomy between the goal and the practice. So dichotomy means the it's the contrast, the biggest contrast. So that's whether that's true or not, but we definitely find, like, you know, we have this high philosophy, and then this is who we are, and Many devotees have their struggles, their moments of weakness, their moments of failure, their moments when when they just, couldn't live up to it. Then of course you get like with religious failure, you get fall down, you get guilt. Get depression, and you got people who start to give up just because they cannot live with depression. You know, it's so depressing when you cannot follow. Better just give it up. Right? So you don't have to, that you're free of this feeling of guilt. So some people we used to say, you know, like living in the temple. You know, you're at the bottom. Right? You can't quite make it. Then, if you live out in the congregation, then you'll be a star. You know, you'll be a good congregational member because maybe you can't follow everything, but you're doing a lot. So somebody who's doing a lot on the outside, not following everything, is considered like a good congregational member. Someone in the temple who is not following everything is, by temple standard, considered a bit out of it. Right? So, where are we going to situate ourselves? Mm-hmm. Whatever it may be, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is a book that deals with our spiritual life and gives us particular answers that we will not get anywhere else. The Bhagavad Gita is the introduction to Krishna consciousness, which basically gives us an overview of various philosophies, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and finally established bhakti yoga, devotional service to Krishna as supreme. And then the Bhagavatam does not just establish devotional service as supreme, but it establishes that devotional service is to Krishna and the interaction with Krishna and the sentiments that come out between Krishna and his devotees, they come out in the Bhagavatam, in the pastimes. The heart becomes more involved. Because, you know, there is Krishna, and Krishna grabs the tail, and Balarama pulled by the calf through the mud, and, you know, you can visualize it, and it's far out. Even in the little Krishna movie, it looks nice. Right? So, like this, you know, these pastimes can be visualized. So Bhagavatam has, by visualizing things, aspects that can affect our heart in details. Yes, something you like. And that way, it draws us in. And once our heart develops attachment to certain aspects of Krishna, then our faith grows roots. You know, yes, I like this Krishna consciousness. Yes, I want it. Because I love cauliflower pakora. Yes. Sometimes, you know, we have like then a devotee who falls out of the boat, right? Who kind of falls out of the boat and, yeah, just falls down from the principles and from chanting, etc. And then, you know, and that devotee may say that, you know, from where I am now, Krishna consciousness just looks like a beautiful dream. And I'm not making this up. Devotees have said this to me. I have encountered this. It's just like, but Lord Chaitanya comes in, right? And Lord Chaitanya, he tends to accept, you know, even a little endeavor, even when it is like a poor endeavor, right? And gives you credit for it, gives you the full credit for it. Yeah. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he says in one verse, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Kara Vichar, Vichara Karita Chitte Pava Chamatkar. And that verse means that if you are indeed interested in logic, then apply that logic to the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if you will do so, you will find it amazing. You'll experience chitta pava chamatkar. In your heart, you will feel amazement. So it's this amazement, this feeling of amazement that we will get when we appreciate how much Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the background is helping us, actually. How much he's an active agent in our spiritual life. Right? Then he becomes a great source of strength. Therefore, the ultimate reason why we are reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita is for our own personal nourishment and a personal inspiration. And first of all, as a source of strength, and then second of all, it gives us the objective, right? Where love of God is explained, you know. I mean, in the Bhagavatam, you see it. It's there. It comes between Nandan Yasoda and Krishna, and you see Uddhava coming, and you sort of get an idea that Uddhava is on a different level than Nandan Yasoda and the gopis and so on. So you get it in the Bhagavatam, but the CC starts from there. It just basically starts from there. It's like it's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is tasting. He's tasting this, right? And it is that, and we are tasting along, and we are getting. So in this way, we get a clear idea of where we're going, what this love of God is made up of. A process is given to us by Rupa Goswami very clearly in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is it's all given again. So in this way, it is our personal spiritual life which we encounter in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that is why we are reading it. And this course, which is giving us a very broad background, it has given us context, it has given us some insights in the structure of the book, and maybe some of the motives that Kaviraj Goswami had. All right, that we've all discussed. To add more depth, right? But the deepest and ultimate thing is our personal spiritual life with it all. And I feel that being here in the Bhaktivedanta College, I'd like to make that point, that the college is taking students very broadly into a process of learning how to enter into dialogue, right? Or as our Krishna Kshetra was touching upon the bridge preaching this morning as he liked it. Obviously an academic type of training is a training where one temporarily suspends his own conviction, right? Not renounces it, but temporarily suspend your own beliefs and ideas, put them aside, and have an objective look to understand the systems of beliefs and of other traditions and either religious or not religious, and in this way get an overview and then learn how to return to your own faith and belief, learn how to express your own faith and belief, and then find common points, because common points are bridges, right? Obviously, you know, like, we are from different backgrounds, but if we have some common ground, maybe between us, we don't know each other, but kirtan, right? I know you like Madanga, you know I like harmonium and rocking kirtan. So, okay, we have kirtan. So, okay, there's a bridge, you know? Or, you know, glasses, right? We have glasses. There are people with glasses and there are people without glasses. You know what I'm saying? It's like a different universe, you know? All right, so bridges. Common interest. And in the academic world, one learns to communicate in this way, to identify common ground and also differences, to identify these. And one learns how to communicate in this way, in an objective way, like, you know, respecting differences without immediately jumping on them and cutting them to pieces. And that's good. So, but at the core of it all, and if in such a college, if at the core of all we are not strengthening and deepening our faith in Krishna, right? And then we are missing the whole essence, you know, of like the whole educational process. And then, we're sort of defeating the purpose of being here and studying in Radha Desh. So my course, which I do every year, is kind of meant to connect with all of that. It's meant to, give you a focus on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because as I explained to you, that is the essence of our identity as Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But I also try to give you a good overview. I try to help you to present that identity better to the outside world by giving you philosophical insights, historical roots, context, you know, a map of, I've given you basically when, where, what, why, and so on. I've given you some ammunition by which we can present ourselves better to others and to ourselves. But the first and foremost thing is that we are not studying Gaudiya Vaishnavism as academics. We are practitioners of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and we are trying to become devotees, and therefore ultimately, after we've heard everything about the Tony Stewarts and the Dimmocks and the Man Rings, and then you have early writings about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from Kennedy, who is like really biased Christian type of writer, or you have early Indian scholarship, D.C. Sen or S.K. Day, who are like just so influenced by British scholarship that they condemn their own culture. All that, we are now, everything we have heard now, we are disregarding at this point, and that at the conclusion of this seminar, and that's what I'm trying to say. That all now, we are saying, that was nice, that was a little bit of nice embellishment, nice little background, nice little tidbits of information, but we go to the core, that our very faith, right, depends on the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because without it, we cannot possibly be successful in this process. It's not possible. This is the age of Lord Chaitanya, and that's why I'm such a always hammering on Lord Chaitanya. It's not that I don't like Radha Krishna or that I don't read about Radha Krishna and Vraja Leelas and so on. I do. And it's not that I don't know about something about Krishna and the gopis and some nice little pastimes and so on. But I'm emphasizing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in particular because we need him. We very much need him. And therefore I'd like to say we need also a Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? Because how otherwise will we know him? So it's not like a book that, there are so many books and it's the postgraduate study anyway, and some people never get past the first canto of the Bhagavatam. It's like, what to do, no time to read, right? But Prabhupada started speaking on the Chaitanya Charitamrita to the new devotees in 1966 in New York. We very much, the reason why the CC is postgraduate study is because there are certain things in the CC referring to the knowledge of Bhagavatam, and one is already supposed to kind of know that. It's not explained anymore. That's all. But it's not that you that when it said the CC is postgraduate study, that's radioactive if you've never finished the Bhagavatam to the last letter, right? Forbidden, no entry, no turn back, wrong way, kind of thing. No. No, please, read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Read it, even a little bit, because in it we will, and read it with the invitation of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Try and understand the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because we depend on it. Okay, well that's my presentation now. Is there any question or comment left over?
I'd like to ask if it's possible for one who just is read Chaitanya Charitamrita and he never read Bhagavatam or Gita before, but he is doing four intellectual principle chanting, is it possible to attain this goal?
Okay. The answer to it is the story of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And there was in Assam, it's on the east side of India, there was an earth tremor, suddenly. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was in that area, and he was giving a lecture. And during the lecture, due to the earth tremor, the river just flooded the whole area. But somehow or other, the hall where the lecture was going on was a little high. So the hall didn't get flooded, but the area around it was all flooded. So then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta started to speak on the Mahapralaya, that at the end of the universal creation, there will be a big flood and everything will go under. And he said, and when the Mahapralaya comes, what will you do? What will you take? You'll take some valuables, right? And quickly leave the house for higher ground. What will you take? You'll take the Bhagavad Gita, you take the Srimad Bhagavatam, you take the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But if it gets too much to carry and you gotta let something go, what will you let go? Let go of the Bhagavad Gita. With Bhagavatam and CC, continue walking. Or, you know. And, you know, continue walking. But is it waterproof? We need a waterproof iPad now. And then, solar charged. Anyway, then if it gets too heavy, then you let the Bhagavatam go. He said, then you have only the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, that ultimately is enough. He said, because from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, everything can be restored. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta has answered your question. I am just repeating the answer. Okay. No, that's that we don't see anywhere, you know, like, I mean, I've been looking for that for a long, long time, and we don't see that. Somewhere we see a reference, he is a desire tree, but I think that didn't refer to his Siddhadeha. I think that it was just a poetic description of, like, all the Vaishnavas are desire trees. So I don't think that was the correct Siddhadeha for Madhavendra Puri. So we don't know his Siddhadeha. One thing we know about Madhavendra Puri is that he is a Shakti Avesh avatar of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is Murari Gupta who says that. And that he's an empowered incarnation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That we know. So that gives us something about his specific power, but no Siddhadeha. Just like Prabhupada, we also don't have. And people can write books and papers about it, but that remains inconclusive. Because Prabhupada said that, when asked, Prabhupada said, that you don't require. So we don't know Prabhupada and we don't know Madhavendra Puri. Okay, I'm done. We thank you. Have a nice kirtan weekend.